The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Recently on NewYorker.com, we published a poem from North Korea, our first. It's called Blizzard, by a writer identified as Bandy. Bandy is the only dissident we know of writing from inside the DPRK. It's an extraordinarily isolated nation, and we know almost nothing about its culture. The New Yorker Radio Hour's Mythili Rao has been writing about the strange circumstances behind Bandy's work.
So here's what we think we know about Bandy. He's believed to be a North Korean writer working as a propagandist for the state. And the story goes that sometime in the 80s or 90s, he started secretly writing fiction that was critical of the regime. There was no way he was going to be able to publish that, so these papers quietly accumulated, hidden away somewhere. Several years ago, a relative of Bandy's told him she was going to defect. She was going to leave North Korea. And at that point, he told her about this manuscript and asked her if she could take it with her. She said that would be far too dangerous in case she was caught, but if she made it across safely, she would try to send back for it. When this relative got to South Korea, she got in touch with a human rights activist who had a lot of contacts along the border, and he was able to find someone who could sneak in and contact Bandy. And the story goes that the manuscript was smuggled out of the country, concealed in a copy of the selected works of Kim Il-sung. The short stories in that manuscript were published first in Korean and then in English under the title The Accusation. And the poems that were also in those crumbling pages are now being translated by a Korean-American scholar named Heinz Insoo Finkel. I asked him to read one of the poems. It's called Blizzard.
So this poem is called Blizzard. Blizzard, blizzard, the sound of winter crying, chest pounding, sobbing, the sound of winter crying. Spring, summer, fall, and winter, four seasons and only you. Weeping the indignity of your unfortunate fate, never knowing soft flowers, green leaves, ripe fruit, only frost and snow, born of cold north wind, your whole life huddling, cringing, shivering, weeping the indignity of your unfortunate fate, blizzard, blizzard, the sound of winter crying, chest pounding, sobbing, the sound of winter crying, try to tear it up, throw it out, your unfortunate fate, running, spewing blood, in the sound of winter crying. So in my translation, I tried to get a sense of the rhythmic quality of the Korean. So I'll read you a couple lines of the refrain in the Korean. In Korean, the title is 눈보라. 눈보라, 눈보라. 겨울이 우는 소리. 가슴 치며 흐느끼며 겨울이 우는 소리. So on the surface, that simply sounds like a representation of the harsh winter in North Korea. And anyone who's lived in Korea knows that during the winter, the winds come from the Siberian region, and they're bitterly cold. But it's especially poignant because we know that in North Korea, there's a tremendous amount of labor going on in such harsh conditions.
I wanted to talk a little more about who Bandy is. What do we know about Bandy and his biography?
One thing we know from the nature of the stories and the poems is that he very clearly had the kind of training that a member of the Joseon Writers Alliance would have. The stylistic tricks and the tropes that he uses are very consistent with that kind of literature.
And the Joseon Writers Alliance is the alliance of North Korean propaganda writers. And what does being a propaganda writer in North Korea entail?
So for a propaganda writer, the writers don't simply sit down and write what comes to their own minds. They're actually given a particular assignment or a particular mission. So, for example, the government might say, we need some stories that will help to increase the production of potatoes, or stories that discourage stripping the environment of flowers. And the writer would then be tasked with doing that. And at the same time, including some theme in that story or poem that also glorifies Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un. So it's a very difficult task.
Do you see stylistic traces of that kind of propaganda approach to writing in this work?
The poems in general, I guess you would say the layered language. For example, let me see if I can find a good example for you. So, yeah, here's one that sort of turns the tables using the same kind of imagery and technique. This one is called Toads, and it says, "The long rains go on, only you toads are thriving. Croak, 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 croak. Dark black clouds, not a spot of sun to see, but still you enjoy it this world this time. Croak, 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 croak. Soaked, bloated by flood, your stylish red bellies, croak, 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 croak. Your asses foam in the muck, your spirits rise. And yes, you enjoy it this world this time. Croak, 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 croak." So that's a pretty explicit and vicious comparison of somebody in political power with a typical Korean toad. The toad is called a menkungi, and it's a fairly common sight. The menkungi type toad is one that will it will puff itself up, right? So to look bigger than it actually is. And when I was a little kid, we used to find these toads and tap them with a stick, and that would cause them to puff up and their bellies would turn red. So this is the kind of poem that would be very familiar to any Korean. Normally, this form would be used to glorify some political figure or some administrator, but it's being used to turn the tables.
A lot of people are skeptical about Bandy really being a living writer in North Korea. A lot of experts I've spoken with have said it just seems like maybe some part of the story isn't quite what is being presented. Why does it seem plausible to you that Bandy is a living North Korean writer?
So one of the things that makes me think that the manuscript is authentic was Do-hyun's description of how delicate it was.
Do-hyun is the human rights activist.
Yes, and he described it to me, and I was thinking, well, you know, the manuscript is only from the mid-90s, so to an American, it wouldn't make sense that the paper would be so delicate that it would crumble. But if you're familiar with Korean manuscript paper, it makes perfect sense. When I was growing up in South Korea, the manuscript paper that was used, they called it dongjongi, which literally means like dung paper. And it was a very low-grade recycled paper. It was never white. It was like slightly gray. And in North Korea, they still use that. And that paper has such a high acid content that if you just leave it sitting around for 10 years and then fold the page, that page will literally break at the fold. So the description of the manuscript pages made perfect sense to me.
Before we go, do you want to read one more poem?
Okay. So this poem is called My Love. "Even from that distance, you flood me with feeling when you meet my eyes. Please, woman, do not tempt me. I have a love that awaits, true to me, pouring forth a fierce devotion. Beaming that smile with your painted lips, please, woman, do not tempt me. I have a love that awaits, to whom I've trusted all my heart. Love is two souls become eternally one. Please, woman, do not tempt me. If in this life we cannot meet, I have a love I must meet in death." So this one is very interesting because on the one hand, the woman who's the temptation could represent democracy and the West and capitalism. And then the other love, the love that awaits, is the hope of reunification. Love is two souls become eternally one. That would be the reunification of the peninsula. So this one is actually, when I was translating it, it actually brought tears to my eyes because it's a real tearjerker.
This imagined perfect love, does that describe a unified regime that follows a North Korean template? I mean, is this a pro-regime poem or is this an anti-regime poem, if you can simplify it that way?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because the dream of reunification is seen sort of differently in the North and in the South. So in the old days, from the Kim Il-sung point of view, reunification was the forcible reuniting of the peninsula under the communist regime. These days, the idea is much more diplomatic and suggests the kind of compromise. But I think from the North Korean point of view, the reunification would be a kind of socialist country with less influence from American capitalism. The South Korean idea right now is a much more realistic view. They're expecting a reunification that's much more emotional in terms of, say, families finally being able to reunite, but they understand the reunification process as one that's going to require lots of economic and social sacrifices from the South. But I think the dream of the unified peninsula is actually shared in common, especially by the younger generation. They're much more idealistic about it than people who grew up during the war years.
That's Heinz Insoo Fenkel, a translator and scholar of Korean culture. He spoke with Mythili Rao, one of our producers. She wrote about Bandy's fiction at NewYorker.com.